Based on a new report, the U.S. military was urgently warned about civilian presence during its deadly drone attack in the African capital last month. Families of five Iranian nuclear scientists assassinated over the past decade filed a lawsuit against the U.S. government. And France accuses Australia and the U.S. of lying after Canberra cancels a multi-billion-dollar order for French submarines in favor of American vessels. Good to have you with us. Now, based on a new report, the CIA had warned about civilian presence just before a missile fired by a U.S. military drone hit the African capital last month. According to informed sources, the CIA's warning was heard 29 seconds before the missile hit the target, killing 10 civilians, including 7 children. Families of the victims demand a face-to-face apology and compensation for the lives of their loved ones. A top U.S. general has already admitted that the August 29th attack did not kill any terrorists. The U.S. had earlier claimed that a missile fired from its drone hit a position of Daesh terrorists. Washington then said that the attack was in retaliation for the bombing of the Kabul airport as foreign nationals were being evacuated. Iran has again called on the United States to abandon its unilateralist approach to the 2015 nuclear deal, known as the JCPOA. In his weekly briefing, foreign ministry spokesman said the talks in Vienna aimed at reviving the JCPOA will proceed in a better direction if the U.S. walks away from unilateralism. Saeed Khatibzadeh says that Tehran needs to make sure if Washington can be trusted in its willingness to meet its JCPOA obligations again, and that in a verifiable manner. Khatibzadeh stressed that Iran does not take on any more commitments beyond the nuclear deal, nor would it accept benefits beneath what the JCPOA had promised. Iran and the remaining parties to the accord have held several rounds of talks in the Austrian capital to restore the nuclear deal. This 3 years after the U.S. unilaterally stepped out of the accord and reimposed sanctions on Iran. The chief of the staff of Iran's armed forces has warned that Tehran will destroy bases of anti-Iran terrorist groups in northern Iraq if they stage more attacks against Iranians. Major General Mohammad Hossein Baghri said that the Islamic Republic won't tolerate any mischief in its western border regions. Referring to anti-terror operation by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps in the past 2 weeks, General Baghri said that such efforts against terrorist groups will expand if they keep staging the attacks. He also urged the Kurdistan Regional Government and the Iraqi government to counter anti-Iran groups. The general said that Iraqi officials must prevent armed groups in the area to have training barracks, radio and television stations, and camps. The region has been used for a long time by anti-Iran groups such as the Kurdistan Workers Party and its offshoot PAJAK to launch sporadic attacks on Iranian border areas. President Ibrahim Raisi has hailed Iran's gaining full membership at the Shanghai Cooperation Organization as a diplomatic success.
The Islamic Republic of Iran's membership in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization was a strategic move and a diplomatic success.
Raisi says that the membership establishes a strong economic link leading to Iran's access to Asia's economic infrastructure and its sustainable resources. He made a comment upon his arrival in Tehran after a 3-day visit to the Tajik capital. Raisi attended the 21st summit of the SCO in Dushanbe, where Iran's full membership in the organization was approved. The president also spoke of Iran's stance vis-à-vis Afghanistan that was mentioned on the sidelines of that summit. During a presser before leaving Dushanbe, Raisi stressed that Iran would not allow terrorist groups like Daesh to establish a presence near its border with Afghanistan.
The U.S.-trained Daesh terrorist group has moved into Afghanistan after committing atrocities in Syria and Iraq. The presence of Daesh in Afghanistan is dangerous not only for Afghanistan, but also for the region. We will not allow terrorist organizations like Daesh to set up bases on our border and strike other countries in the region.
And the joint presidents of Iran and Tajikistan called for an all-inclusive government in Afghanistan following the Taliban's takeover of the country. Raisi noted that a government comprised of only one political or ethnic group cannot resolve problems in Afghanistan. Then Imam Ali Rahman also said that peace and stability should be restored to the war-stricken country for the sake of regional security. He warned that an escalation of violence could lead to a humanitarian disaster for Afghanistan and turn it into a hub for terrorism in the region. Time now for the news review. Now, new details have emerged on Israel's assassination of Iranian nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. According to U.S. media, Israel's spying agency Mossad had been monitoring and wanting to kill Iran's top nuclear scientist for years. The report also points to the significant role that former U.S. President Donald Trump played in facilitating the attack. Israel reportedly used an AI-assisted sniper machine gun placed on the way of Fakhrizadeh's convoy to assassinate him. Israel had tried to kill him in 2009, but the mission had failed and was called off after the Iranian intelligence discovered the plot. Meantime, families of five Iranian nuclear scientists assassinated over the past decade have filed a lawsuit against the U.S. government. Time now to ask for some insight and see what our guests think about this issue. So Tim Anderson, director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, is joining me from Damascus, and Barrett Grossman, international lawyer from Bali, Indonesia. Let's go to Damascus. Tim, given what you heard about the story, and we have this new report that's unveiling some more information, including former President Donald Trump's collaboration with this assassination attempt, can you label this anything but state terrorism?
It certainly is state terrorism, and the report by the New York Times confirms what we have suspected, of course, that Mossad was behind it and that they had a green light from Washington. It's not just that it's state terrorism. The Israelis seem to like to boast about it, although officially they don't admit it. But this is smeared all across the front pages of the Israeli media. So they're rather proud of the fact that they can carry out these acts of terrorism, these murders, and get away with it and inflate their image on the international stage.
Now, Barry, as an international lawyer, what's the way to take up? I mean, you heard the families of the victims, that they are filing a lawsuit. What hurdles could they be facing?
Well, I think obviously first and foremost that the outcome of that lawsuit will be entirely disregarded by a lot of nations. The extent to which Iran's allies, like China and Russia and some other nations, are willing to give effect to that judgment and enforce it by seizing American assets remains to be seen, and I would suggest is somewhat doubtful, without wanting to be a naysayer. But to echo what our colleague Tim Anderson just said, there's really no doubt about what transpired here. Certainly Israel, for decades, has been notorious in its reliance on assassination as a tactic for getting even with anyone who speaks out against Iran, against Israel, or is perceived as having done damage to Israel. But we come back to the question, which of course you posed, which is, well, what is there to be done about it? Let's not forget that even when it came to the butchering of Khashoggi in the face of clear evidence of involvement by the most senior elements in the House of Saud, and findings by the U.S. security apparatus that MBS himself was involved, nothing has happened. When it came to the brutal murder of General Soleimani, remember, Donald Trump only in 2015 did not know who he was. He was embarrassed in an interview not even to recognize the name. And he thought in that interview in 2015 that any reference to the Quds forces was a reference to the Kurds, but not much later, only a year or so ago, he thought it was important enough to order the assassination of General Soleimani and justified that decision by claiming publicly that General Soleimani was responsible directly for the murder of millions of people. It's absurd. And of course, the world didn't take much notice of that. Even the fact checkers didn't take much notice of Trump's claim in that instance. Israel itself is a nuclear power. That is, the squatter nation is sitting on an arsenal of, most people suspect, hundreds of nuclear warheads targeted at various nations throughout Europe and the Middle East. Germany has given the Israelis submarines capable of launching nuclear warheads, and yet nothing is done about it, even as Israel rattles its saber continuously at other nations which, without evidence, it claims are pursuing the production of nuclear weapons. It was only a few years ago that the Americans and their allies pressured Iran to come to the table to negotiate a treaty, a multilateral treaty, that in return for Iran agreeing not to pursue the production of nuclear weapons and for allowing inspections to confirm that that was the case, sanctions would be removed and monies being held which belonged to Iran would be returned. And that was done notwithstanding that all 16 agencies in the U.S. security apparatus in their annual briefings to Congress had told Congress that Iran does not have a nuclear weapons program. That was repeatedly said over a period of more than 10 years.
Right.
And then Iran had to make a decision to even start one at any time in the future. But Iran was forced to negotiate and ultimately sign a deal, which the Americans immediately rejected, and nobody cared. So we come to this. The evidence is clear that these were Israeli operations, certainly regarding the most recent. Even the former head of Mossad was reported only 3 months ago of saying in an interview that Israel wanted the world to stand up and take notice that essentially they had assassinated him. So making the case out against the squatter nation for murdering these scientists is relatively easy. Giving effect to the outcome of any judicial determination is another thing altogether, and hopefully Iran's allies will embrace that judicial termination when it's handed down and see that justice is done.
Exactly. And Tim Anderson, as Barry Grossman just rightly mentioned, that Iran's peaceful nature of nuclear program, you know, has been verified multiple times by the IAEA, the nuclear watchdog. And then we have the Tel Aviv regime taking action, and this is like assassinating Iranian scientists, one of them, five, six of them, in the course of years. And very blatantly announcing that, yes, we've done it, and we've done that right, and with the U.S. standing behind it. So what's the right path for Iran to take?
Look, I don't think there's much need for Iran to further defend its nuclear program. It's done that. The issue here is the criminality, the terrorism of the Israeli operatives, and it's backing by the U.S. And I think, although there is a history of impunity by U.S. officials, I think it's worth pursuing these avenues. Let's remember that the defense minister, the Israeli defense minister, Benny Gantz, is currently facing a prosecution in Europe over the murder of a family. And let's remember that Pinochet, the Chilean dictator, was detained briefly in Britain. So there is a point to pursuing these judicial measures, because other countries may, for example, block the travel of U.S. officials and detain them. And when a sufficient head of steam is maintained to several states, there's the possibility that there may be consequences. So I think that Iran has been very restrained in its responses to these murders so far, incredibly restrained, really, surprisingly restrained, including for the murder of General Soleimani. But I think that the judicial processes and, indeed, the responses from Iran would be fully justified, because this has been going on for a very long time, as you pointed out.
Okay, thank you very much for your contribution. Tim Anderson, Director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies in Damascus, and Barry Grossman, international lawyer in Bali, Indonesia. Now, moving on, mourners from across the globe have started their march toward the Iraqi holy city of Karbala to mark the Muslim occasion of Arba'in. The pilgrims have already kicked off their long journey in convoys to arrive in their destination on time to observe the event on September the 27th. The Arba'in commemorations are held annually to observe the 40th day after the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. He was martyred along with 72 of his companions in unequal battle with troops of the Italian ruler of the time over 13 centuries ago. The battle known as the Ashura event is one of the most important religious occasions marked by Muslims. France accuses Australia and the U.S. of lashing out of the U.K. for its, quote, permanent opportunism. And this after Canberra ditched a deal to buy French submarines in favor of a trilateral military partnership with London and Washington.
There have been lies. There has been duplicity. There has been a major rupture of trust. There has been contempt. So it's not going well between us. Not at all. That means that there is a crisis. The fact that for the first time in the history of the relations between the United States and France, we're recalling our ambassador for consultations is a grave political act that shows the intensity of the crisis. We're recalling our ambassadors to see how we can reevaluate the situation. But with Britain, we do not need to. We know their constant opportunism, so there is no use in having our ambassador in Britain come to explain that to us.
La Jean-Yves Le Drian says that French President Macron had not spoken with his U.S. counterpart about the issue. He said that NATO would have to take account of what has happened as it reconsiders its strategy at a summit in Madrid next year. Le Drian said that Paris would make a priority to develop a new EU security strategy when it takes on the bloc's presidency at the start of 2022. France's envoy to Australia had earlier said that Canberra made a huge mistake by scrapping the submarine deal with his country.
I think this has been a huge mistake, a very, very bad handling of a partnership, because it was not a contract, it was a partnership. A trust partnership that's supposed to be based on trust, mutual understanding, and also a partnership based, you know, on sincerity.
The French ambassador says that there needs to be some reassessment of bilateral ties. He made a comment before leaving Canberra. The envoy was recalled to Paris on Saturday along with the French ambassador to Washington. On Thursday, Canberra announced it would scrap its 2016 deal with France's naval group to build a fleet of conventional submarines and instead build at least 8 nuclear-powered ones with U.S. and British technology. And with that, we come to the end of this news broadcast from Tehran.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
I'm Eric Shimanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who is from India, is
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, September 19th, 2021. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English radio programs. If you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice and send it to us and get your voice heard in this program. Do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. So please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, your program, the Sunday program. And I have to note here that many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very important and very useful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL from us. So, here, I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Abdul Alim from Bangladesh, Nicholas Lynch from New Zealand, and Alan Willie from Canada. Abdul Alim, Nicholas, and Alan, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. So many thanks for sending us reception reports. And of course, we have so many letters and emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read their emails. Today, we have many fascinating emails from around the world. First of all, here we have an email from Maje Janchara from Poland. We have an email from Abu Sayed from Bangladesh. From Portugal, we have an email from Paulo Duarte, who is one of our regular listeners. From another regular listener, we have an email from Martin Steiner from Australia. And the last but not the least is an email from Howard Barnett, one of our regular listeners. From England, many thanks for sending us emails and letters from around the world. So, after a short break, I will be back with these fascinating emails. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and you just heard a very beautiful piece of Iranian traditional music. And as I said, we have an email from Poland. This email is from Maje Janchara. For your information, Maje Janchara, our great listener from Poland, has written the right pronunciation of his name, because I don't know Polish, and he has thankfully has written the right pronunciation of his name so that I can pronounce his name rightfully. So thank you, Maje Janchara. So Maje Janchara from Poland says, "Dear the staff of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, I'm glad to say that I listen to your station on shortwave here in Lublin, Poland. The signal was strong, with little noise and a slight fading, but not making transmission difficult to understand. narrow bandwidth was necessary due to squeak from other station in wide mode. I am a young shortwave listener. I like to listen to your radio broadcast because they help me learn more about Iranian culture. I also love listening to archive programs on your website. My favorites are Iranian Market and Close Up Iran. I hope you find my report useful and would be grateful for confirming my reception with an EQSL. It's understandable you're not sending paper QSLs during the pandemic. I hope I will be able to obtain it next time. Best regards. First of all, salam and warmest greetings to you, Maciej Janczara from Poland. Many thanks for writing this amazing email to IRIB English Radio, and it seems that you're carefully following our programs in IRIB English Radio, and you know many things about it. That's great. We have you with us. So we are so happy that you found the reception great. As you said, the signal was strong and only you had a little noise. So that's great. And we are so happy that the signals of IRIB English Radio are heard in your region in Lublin, Poland. It's great. So you listen to the programs Iranian Market and Close Up Iran. Of course, you said you listen to the archives. Yes. So the archives are available at our website. But on Mondays, Close Up Iran is being broadcast at IRIB English Radio. That's great. We are so happy that you reflected your views about our programs in your email. So, Maciej Janczara, many thanks again for writing this email to us. Continue doing so. We are waiting for another email from you, Maciej, from Poland. Many thanks. And from Bangladesh, as I said, we have an email from Abu Sayed. Abu Sayed from Bangladesh says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, I'm very happy to get your email. For some time, I could not access your website from Bangladesh. However, the problem is no more at the moment. Your website is always very interesting. It would be great if we can receive a paper QSL card from your side again, because, in my opinion, it plays an effective role in increasing the listener of your interesting radio. We are always with you and hope our relationship deepens. First of all, salam and warmest greetings to you, Abu Sayed from Bangladesh. We are so happy that there is this relationship between us and you, and we also hope that our relationship deepens and deepens more and more. We all wish you all the best. Many thanks for writing this interesting email. Of course, we hope that we could soon send you a paper QSL card. And as you know, most of our listeners around the world like the paper QSL card. It's something like listening to shortwave or traditional radio. It's more palpable and it's pleasant. Yes, I know it. But according to international laws regarding the coronavirus pandemic, for the time being, we just can send our dear listeners EQSLs. So please be patient until the coronavirus is over around the world, and then we can send our dear listeners paper QSL cards and the promotional items of IRIB English Radio. Okay, many thanks for writing this email to us. We are so happy to have you with us, and we hope this relationship deepens. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Now, dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other amazing emails from around the world. know. Here we have an email from Portugal. This email is from Paulo Duarte, one of our regular listeners. So Paulo says, thank you for your reply. I'd like to receive QSL cards from your radio station, but unfortunately, I don't listen shortwave radios anymore, and the only way I access your broadcast is internet. And of course, I listen to your radio via your website, and I have to say that your website condition is very good. I just don't know about your program's schedule. Could you please send me a copy of that, please? Salam and warmest greetings to you, Paulo Duarte from Portugal. And I do express my appreciations to you for sending us this email. So you said you don't listen to shortwave radio stations anymore. Why don't you tell us why you don't do that? We want to know why you don't listen to shortwave radio anymore. But fortunately, you have access to our broadcast through internet. That's great. And we are so happy you enjoy the programs and the condition of the website. That's great. And you mentioned something about the paper QSL cards. And as I have mentioned several times during the programs, it's not possible because of the coronavirus. And regarding your request about sending you program schedule, you can find our program's schedule through our website. Yes, it's on our website, the program's schedule and the frequency schedule. There you can find it. And it's not possible to send you a copy of that because of coronavirus pandemic. So soon after the corona is over, we will send you what you have requested. Paulo Duarte from Portugal, many thanks for writing to us. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. So please write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. And from Australia, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, from Martin Snader. Martin says, hi, IRB English Radio. Thank you very much for your EQSL card. It is unfortunate that your QSL card was rejected by our mailing system, and I appreciate that you went to the effort of sending out the EQSL. Kind regards. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Martin Steiner from Australia, and many thanks for reflecting your views about EQSL and QSL cards through this email. Of course, we resume sending QSL cards after the pandemic is over, and my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. Write to us soon, Martin, from Australia, and tell us your views about our programs. And now, dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with an email from Howard Barnett. Stay with us. Heard a piece of Iranian traditional music again. Well, as I said, here we have an email from England. This is from Howard Barnett, one of our regular listeners, who says, dear sir or madam at IRIB English Radio, hello again. I thought I sent you another reception report. I tuned into your radio station via internet. What I heard was the program Discovering Islam. This was a talk about Islamic literature, Quran, and God. This was followed by a station announcement, then some music. Next, you advertise your programs, then the program In the Limelight, which talked about the coronavirus. I will be delighted to receive another EQSL, yours sincerely. Salam, hello, warmest greetings to you, Howard Barnett from England. Many thanks for writing this email to us. So, you tuned in to our radio via internet. So why don't you listen to IRM English Radio via shortwave or traditional radio? Tell us why. So, and what you caught was a program, Discovering Islam, and then talking about Islamic literature, the Noble Quran, and God. And you also heard station announcement and then some music. And It seems that you also listened to our program In the Limelight. So, Howard Barnett from England, why don't you tell us your views about our programs? Tell us which program or programs you like the best. So, my colleagues, Howard Barnett, will send you soon an EQSL card. Yes, wait for one of them. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future, Howard Barnett from England. So, dear listeners, time tells me that we have to skip to the next section of our program, which is this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. We hope you'll enjoy it.
Yes, I'm 61 years of age. I'm a shortwave listener. I've been a shortwave listener for many years, listening to international broadcasts from all over the world. Well, I'm very glad that you are remaining on shortwave. Some international broadcasters have ceased broadcasting on shortwave in favor of the internet or satellite, but I'm glad that your station is remaining on shortwave and does put out a good signal here in Western Europe. So I'm very pleased to say that you're going against the trend of leaving shortwave and you are remaining on shortwave, and I believe that is very, very important because there are many people who still do listen around the world on shortwave. Well, your broadcasts are very, very factual and very informative, and give a good view of your opinion on world events, and I find them quite interesting.
And before we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special, I again thanks those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports and letters, including Majie Yanchara, Howard Barnett, Paulo Duarte, Martin Steiner, Abu Sayed, Alan Willey, Nicholas Lynch, and Abdul Alim. Keep in touch with IRIB English Radio, and goodbye.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
This one lay. Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. Things don't seem to be so rosy with U.S. allies these days. First, many felt ignored when Washington decided to swiftly withdraw from Afghanistan without consulting its allies, and now it's AUKUS. A security pact between the U.S., U.K., and Australia has sidelined France and caused Canberra to withdraw from a $40 billion submarine deal with Paris. The French are livid, and the U.K. and the U.S. say it's nothing important. Now, the pact is also a cause of concern for China and possible escalation of nukes. Stay with us as we take a look at all of this on this Spotlight. I'd like to start this off crossing over to Brussels, talking to our correspondent, Jerome Hughes. Wow, lots of friction here. Go for it. Tell me what's going on and the reaction from the European Union.
That's right, Marcia. No doubt that there are tensions now. We know that Canberra ditched the plans, the contract, the submarine contract with France in favor of the United States and Britain, a contract with them, and this has caused tensions. And in response, what Paris has done is recalled its ambassadors to the United States and Australia. Strangely, the UK doesn't seem to be as much in the firing line, but I think that's because the main players in this for France would be the United States and Britain. And, you know, we see divisions within the European Union, we just see divisions within NATO. And don't forget, the UK, Britain and France are all members of the G7 group of countries. So now we're seeing divisions in the G7. So it's not clear exactly how this will pan out, but no doubt that Emmanuel Macron will have one eye on the forthcoming elections in France. So we're heading into an election year, and this is a big deal for him. It makes him look bad, and he certainly won't be wanting any sort of kickback in the polls and also for when he's fighting for re-election. So we have to see how it goes. You know, the other thing that we're hearing is that we have to look deeper into this. I mean, what influence perhaps does the arms industry have in all of this? We know that it's exceptionally powerful as a lobby group in the United States. So what maybe is going on behind the scenes that we don't know about, that's a big question. And also we might hear from the likes of Macron and Merkel and other people asking the European Commission to tone down this constant rhetoric we're hearing on a daily basis of the EU needing to become more autonomous, less reliant on the United States, and all of this pushing towards an EU army. So I think the likes of Macron might be saying to those people in the European Commission, calm this down a little bit, because you know, we're seeing a bit of a backlash from the United States.
All right, very interesting. Thanks so much for that update, Jerome Hughes. I'd like to welcome my guest now to this program, Executive Intelligence Review, William Jones out of Leesburg. And writer and political commentator, John White of Edinburgh.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you both for being with us. Let's start this off with William. Your perspective, why has this trilateral pact been made at this time, in your perspective?
Well, this is very dramatic, and this is very worrying. I think we have escalated a little bit up towards military conflict, unless we can pull back somewhat. It is a very dramatic move because the sharing of these technologies, nuclear propulsion technologies, were the purview in many respects of the United States, but also 1958, they brought the Brits in with them. And this Anglo-American special relationship has been in all the wars since the end of World War II, and is very close, and relates to a rather imperial outlook stemming probably from the British Empire that's been adopted by the Americans in many respects. But bringing the Aussies in here, of course, it was twofold. One thing, of course, the Australians, who have been in a fight with China and don't seem to want to compromise in any way, want to have a better position here, and so that they've been lobbying for this, with the Brits in particular, for this nuclear deal. But also Biden, who wants a stronger force really surrounding China and monitoring China, also thought that by upgrading this agreement, bringing in the Aussies in this thing is going to be a way of increasing the pressure on China, which of course it will do. But of course he's made a lot of enemies in the meantime, and it's really when the dust settles, it really is going to be hard to figure out who is really still a friend and who is much more suspicious of this Anglo-American conspiracy, not least of all in Asia, not only the Chinese, of course, but also all the other Asian countries who see this Anglo element in the new policy. Mm. They will not be happy with this at all.
Okay, well, John, your take, why do you think this was done in the way that it was? I mean, what was the overall goal, or were they not even thinking about the overall effect that it would have, for example, on the French or the Europeans in general?
Well, I think, I mean, this is a very significant démarche development and has serious ramifications for the Western alliance, for NATO in particular. I think it's an act of desperation. I think it comes in the wake of the Afghanistan debacle. And I think it shows that the Biden administration is perhaps even more incompetent and reckless than the Trump administration, which preceded it, if that can be so said. I do believe that just weeks after retreating from Afghanistan with their tail between their legs, it is not the most propitious time to be forming a bloc or a military bloc with the clear objective of taking on China. It has ramifications for the international order. Australia signed up to the precepts of the Non-Proliferation Treaty in 1973, and if Australia is going to acquire nuclear submarines, that's a clear violation of its obligations under its membership of the NPT. Here you have Iran being demonized, being castigated, being sanctioned, because it is a member of the NPT, but chooses to develop nuclear energy for domestic purposes slowly. Israel has some 90 nuclear warheads and the fissile material to develop another 200. It's not a member of the NPT. So this throws up all the contradictions of the international order, the way the West, and certainly major powers such as the US, is able to flout international law and to flout its obligations under treaties that it has so signed. So this is a panicked response to the growing soft power, more than hard power, influence of China in the world, and it is an attempt to go back in time to a period where the US enjoyed complete hegemony in the wake of the collapse of the Berlin Wall. It is panicked, it's desperate, and it just shows you that the West is in decline, and it has no answers to the challenges of today or the future, which China clearly does have under its stunning success of its Belt and Road Initiative.
Well, William, your take. I mean, why do you think that Canberra has basically made a deal with Paris null and void, and they did it in the way that they did it? I mean, wasn't there, I'm sure, perhaps a better way, or having consulted France ahead of time? If France said that it had been working on this, I guess, 4 years, And basically, the deal was inked and nothing. So what does it mean overall as far as reliability in dealing with these countries?
Well, obviously, there's a great deal of mistrust now between the various nations, not only the French and Australian split, but also the U.S. and French split, which I think is going to be much more long-lasting than one can assume. I mean, they called off a celebration they were having on Franco-American friendship, pulled back the ambassadors, and when they'll be coming back, we just don't know. So that there is a serious split within NATO because of this. And the fact that the Australians were keeping this very secret, I think, is they wanted, they certainly wanted to have it as a deal before they broke the other deal, I think. But I think nobody really wanted to talk about it or to indicate that this was in the works until it was a done deal, because they realized how dramatic this would be. And had there been an outcry prior to the deal being settled, it might not have happened at all. But it's a very serious development, and I'm sure the Chinese and the Russians are now looking very closely at countermeasures they might want to take with this escalation, which is now you'll have, you know, these nuclear submarines surrounding the coast of China, you know, interminably. That's not a situation that they're very happy with, and I'm sure, although they're approaching it from the nuclear proliferation angle, as the other speaker mentioned, it is a breach of the NPT. Australia is not a member of the NPT, and while this doesn't give them a nuclear weapon, it gives them a really tremendous nuclear capability, which probably would have to be a part of the NPT. So all of this is still up in the air. And I think it's going to be a while before the dust settles on this thing, but it has serious consequences for peace, for cooperation, and for dealing with a lot of the major issues that are facing the world today.
Hmm. John, your take on that. I mean, what do you think is the overall goal? Because as William has just said, it's going to increase tension in the region, especially surrounding China with nuclear submarines. I mean, do the Aussies want to take on China? Does the United States really want to take on China in a military conflict? Or what's the overall goal?
Well, I don't know where William gets his information from, but my information is that Australia signed up to the NPT in 1973. But besides that point, it's Washington's imperial hegemonic decline continues at a pace. And this is a desperate attempt to shore up its fading hegemony, as I said earlier. I think the Chinese will look at this with the contempt it deserves. China already has the largest navy in the world. China is a massive economy, the only economy that grew in the midst of COVID in 2020, while the US returned a negative growth rate of 3.15%. The UK has been very opportunistic in this, because in this Brexit, post-Brexit age, is looking to hire itself out as a gun for hire, so to speak. China's strength, as I said, is its soft power under its Belt and Road Initiative, where China comes with investment, the US and the West in general comes with bombs and missiles and saber-rattling and military aggression. That day has passed. The West has no answer to the challenges of the 20th century. China does have. It understands interdependence, not nationalism, not nativism, is the answer to the challenges of the world, whether it's in terms of the economy, in terms of the climate emergency, in terms of the issues surrounding the global emergency of refugee crises produced by wars and produced by the instability wrought by Western foreign policy. So China is the future. China and those aligned with China are the future. In the West, this is a desperate attempt to shore up Western hegemony. France will now have to look at its own strategic vision anew. It will have to decide whether its interests are in keeping with continuing with a US-aligned leadership, or whether it should look at its relations with Russia, China, and the East in general in a different light. Because let's be clear, this is not just in terms of material demarche from the old order. France is America's oldest ally. It stems back to the Revolutionary War of the late 18th century. This is a slap in the face for France, and this is very significant and a very serious fork in the nose when it comes to France. France will have to, as I say, look at its strategic relations with the US and with the West in general in a different light as a result of the clear insult and breach of integrity and of partnership which it thought it had forged with Western powers, US and Australia in particular.
Well, William, since the start of the COVID pandemic, we've seen lots of strong arm tactics by the US towards its allies, whether it was stealing masks from allies or trying to hijack ventilators. I mean, it just seems that the hegemon of the time is imploding. And do you think that France should actually be surprised? I mean, John just said that France is the oldest ally of the United States. But in evaluating the actions of the United States, especially lately, should any country be surprised?
Well, I think a lot of people were surprised. Maybe they shouldn't be surprised. Everybody knew about the special relationship with Britain, and now it's become an overall English-speaking community. I think the implications are very important. I think that the upside here is that the distrust that has been increased as a result of this can lead to some interesting developments. Of course, the Europeans are now talking even more about having their own defense capability and the like, which is all well and good. But I think also there's another aspect to it, and that is that most of the Europeans were not very happy about the kind of militant attitudes taken by the Biden administration with the continuation, its own version of the pivot, the Quad, and all these other operations to really contain China, because they feel that China is very beneficial to them. As your other speaker mentioned, China has the Belt and Road Initiative, which has been very profitable and very prosperous for European nations. And they don't want to give that up. And they've been kowtowing to the United States for a long time to keep this so-called Western unity. But now that it's become simply a English-speaking grouping, they might not be so interested in sticking with the United States, and they may, in fact, do deals with China that they were prohibited from doing because of the school marm. The United States was looking over their shoulder. Now I don't think they're going to spend so much time on that.
How likely do you think that's going to happen, William? How likely do you see a realignment that could possibly happen with France more looking towards the East, towards looking at China or Russia?
I think there's a good possibility here. Look what we had, and depending on the situation in Germany, of course, they were very interested in the BRI, and now you have a new leadership there, and we'll have to see how that pans out. But both in terms of the relationship with Russia and the relationship with China, most of the European nations were less inclined to take a hard line against these countries. They have their problems with China, and they will talk about them. But I don't think they want to make it into a conflict, and I don't think that they want to break relations with China or create a situation that's damaging to their own economy. And that this new development now really kind of gives them a pretext for not following the rules that are being set by the United States, because it's now this English language hegemon whom they really don't like so much. So it could have an interesting turn, but initially they'll also talk about defense. They'll talk about being in the Indo-Pacific themselves, but I don't think they want a conflict in the same way move towards a conflict in the same way that the Biden administration is in fact doing. So I think there will be a fallout from that.
Well, John, your take on and where this may go, because as both of you have talked about, interesting possibilities and perhaps breaking that whole Western type hegemon on so many different things, because the